Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2589. That's 2589. I'm Carol Levine, and I will be running this show tonight. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And it looks like we're going to have a nice little panel here. Oh, yes, all the people are showing up, and I'm glad to see that. Tonight we're going to have Michelle Bless on. She is our survivor professional tonight. She's also a minister, and she's been through an awful lot of things, Michelle Bless, and she is from Cincinnati, Ohio. And she's a severe child. She had all kinds of child abuse. It was very, very, very severe. She and I have a lot in common. And so we always have a rather wild night when Aunt Michelle gets on here with me. Yes, we do. And she's also an author, Out of the Darkness, The Michelle Bless Story, Her Story of Redemption. And anyway, so we're going to have a good show. And my God, have we got a full panel tonight. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad you're here. Yes, this is great. So anyway, Michelle, I know you're here. This is your 587. Is that you? Let me see.
Hey, it's me. It's Katarina.
Hi, Katarina. How are you?
I'm good. Long time no talk. I'm glad to be on.
I'm so happy that you are on. We're going to have a great show tonight if our Michelle, if she shows up. We're going to have a great show anyway because I have a lot to talk about. I always do, don't I? But anyway, let me get the NASCA mission statement out and give her time to call in. I hope she's okay because I just spoke to her yesterday. All right. First of all, let me speak a little bit about NASCA and the mission statement. I read this because it's a good thing to do. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from, well, two different ways we do this, two different ways. And what, number one, of course, is educating the public. That is so, so important, okay? You can get cards. You can purchase cards from NASCA. There's a place where you can go in and get them and hand them out like I do. I think I've handed out probably 1,000 by now. I don't know. But anyway, the point is it gives a little bit of information on those cards, too. They're good to have. But anyway, again, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. That's number one. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Yes, we're having a lot of feedback here. Okay. Now, when that happens, okay, when we have a lot of that, a lot of times I will close the mics. You okay? I will close the mics. If it okay, now it stopped. That's good. Okay. Now we have a full panel here, and I don't see. Whoops! There it goes again. Someone, you sound like you're scraping something. I don't know. Cut it out. I don't know who it is. But anyway, we have a full panel of people here, And I'm waiting for Michelle Bless to come on. But I will speak a little bit more about NASCA because this is important. People out there who are bashful, okay, about calling in. Yeah, I don't know who's more.
Hmm.
Everybody sits still. Don't move.
Let's explain what's going on. All the microphones are open. Which
means I'm going
to
close
you them. You have to sell. No. Everybody should mute themselves because we're going to leave the mics open on Carol's end, and that means that we can share intermittently throughout the show. But it also means that we can hear all the aggregate sound, all the sounds together, if the mics are open. So we'd like you to self-mute, mute yourself, so we can leave the mics open so this can be a true discussion and not a show that we call on people. If that can't be done, if you can't mute yourself, then we're going to have to mute everybody and call on people. So that's what's going on.
Right, okay. Yes. Okay. So anyway, as I was saying, yes, please, thank you. That's a good idea. I don't like muting people, but if I have to, I have to because we have a show to run here. Okay, so with NASCA, one thing I do want people to understand is that I want everyone who comes to NASCA to look at the front page of our website, NASCA.org, NASCA.org, okay? Because NASCA.org has a tremendous amount of information for people. And I love our website. I think it's great. I use it all the time. And someone is still being very noisy. Thank you very much. But the point is this. If you get involved with the website, a lot of time you can get an awful lot of help that you need right from our website. And I do mention also the programs because I get many calls. A lot of times they're in the AM. Sometimes they're not. But I always direct people to the programs. And the reason why I do that is everything's in alphabetical order. If you go to the programs, you'll see the world spinning around. And just simply go to your state. I'm New Jersey, so I go to New Jersey, and I open up New Jersey. And what it does is it offers all different kinds of programs. And it's all alphabetical. It's quite simple. But if you have a hard time, you can always call me. I'm in the contact list, and I am the night owl. I've been like that for years, so there's nothing new about that. So anyway, the point is I'll guide you through it, and it's very successful. I get emails where people use that program, okay? So anyway, okay. So I'm waiting for Michelle to call in. I don't see her name here. I'm going down the top of the list here, and I don't see her name here. But that's okay because I have something to address. But we have to get rid of that noise. I'm going to have to mute people, Bill.
Okay. It's up to you. Michelle is not here. I'll tell you what.
No, and I spoke to her yesterday. I hope she's all right.
I'll go try and reach her while you mute everybody and continue, and I'll be right back.
Okay. Okay. No, that's not like Michelle, and like I said, I hope she's okay. So I'm going to mute people and then call on them, one at a time because that noise is not going away. I don't know where it's coming from. Spooky. Okay. All right, so one thing I want to talk about tonight, which came to my attention, I think it's very important because we're going through all this, the suicide, people wanting to commit suicide. And with teenagers, one thing that's important is our teenagers, of course, they're many times they're troubled to begin with, all right? And then when we have this pandemic where they can't, they just simply can't get it together, there's too much isolation, they're not allowed to go to school. Some schools are opening, most are not. I mean, there's too many lockdowns, there's too much this, too much that. Kids who are, especially those who have been abused. Now, I have studies here to show that and to prove that because they've done studies on it. But if a child has been sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally abused or neglected, doesn't have to be all of them, okay, but some of them, whatever, the point is these kids are more apt, you know, to have problems. And they're going to be more apt to be, you know, suicidal than those that, you know, come from a home where the parents are together. And we're all having hard times right now. But kids who come from, they're finding this out, kids who come from homes where it's stable, where the parents aren't arguing, there's no violence going on, and they're just trying to do the best that they can. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the parents have lost their jobs because of, for whatever reason, because of the closed down, shutdowns of this and that. A lot of times the parents are so horribly stressed themselves, and that rubs off on kids. Kids can see that. And you know, kids, especially those who have some, you know, underlying conditions themselves, maybe it's mental, emotional, physical, whatever, you know, then they start feeling like a burden. Many times they feel like a burden because a lot of things that the parents say, you know, they may not mean it so harshly, but they'll say, well, we have five kids. What do you expect? Five kids. And, you know, then the kids start feeling bad and they start saying, why was I born? Because they're living in a world that's been taken away from them. They're not allowed to go out in a lot of places. Or now they're talking about double masks. For God's sake, I have trouble breathing enough because of sinus conditions with one mask. And they hear all these horrifying things that are around them. And now they're a burden at home. And they may be suicidal to begin with. So it's a very, very bad thing. And I have some signs here the parents should listen to. And then I want to get into the drugs. But anyway, and that too is very prevalent amongst the teenagers now. We're having a lot of kids that are ODing, okay? All right, but teens at risk during the pandemic, many times it's because of depression, and it can lead to suicide. One of the things is any changes in eating or sleeping habits, all right? Isolation, emotional, social withdrawal. Well, we can't help that right now. This can be just depression also in times that are better. But if they, you know, really isolate themselves, that could be a red flag. Mood swings that are uncommon. Okay, statements like I am a burden, and that's because of, again, job losses in the home. That's a biggie right there. Questions like why was I born? Because children get so upset, they'll say, why was I born? Especially if the parents are fighting and all this other stuff. Lack of interest in usual activities. Okay, well, they're inside the house most of the time, so that doesn't always apply. Not to, you know, with the pandemic, but that's just depression, lack of, you know, interest in usual activities. Acting out behaviors and running away, okay. You know, a lot of times kids are under so much stress, especially if they've been abused and there's too much fighting in the house, they may run away. And they don't care about any pandemic that's out there, okay. They just plain take off. They may all of a sudden, you know, start being very angry children, because they're, you know, disappointed in life, and I can understand that. They'll go into rages and agitation. Some have pre-existing, you know, conditions, but most don't. But because of the way we're living now, right now, kids who are suicidal, who were maybe happy-go-lucky kids before this, may all of a sudden become angry and, you know, display rage and agitation. If they are able to get out, a lot of times they turn to alcohol and drug abuse. There's a lot of fentanyl out there again. I'm going to mention that in a minute. They may start neglecting their personal hygiene because, what the heck, they can't go anywhere anyway, and they're depressed. When people are depressed, whether it be children or adults, they many times can go through this. They may all of a sudden develop an obsession with death and dying, something that they didn't display before, okay? They'll have an obsession with death and dying. Lack of response to praise. They get so down in the dumps because they're so depressed and because they're going through so much that they actually, you know, if someone does praise them, in their family, they won't respond to it because they don't feel happy about it. They don't feel they've lost their happiness. Okay, the heart isn't singing anymore. Okay, because they're that low. Okay, they're that down. Now that came from an organization that I just read to you, and it's if you want to look it up, it's I can't read my own writing. eehealth.org, okay? And his name is Edward, eehealth.org. So it's eehealth.org. And these are the signs for, you know, for parents to look for, because right now we're having teenagers that are just simply out of control with suicidal thoughts and also suicidal actions. So I wanted to get that out there. And, you know, the kids who have been sexually abused, they're making it very clear that they're more apt to be susceptible to, you know, doing to harming themselves, to self-harm, than kids that haven't been abused. And remember, parents, everybody's going through a hard time. The adults are going through hard times. So therefore, you know, don't take it out on your kids. If you have to argue, go take a walk, okay, whatever. But keep it away from your kids because that just stresses things out more. All right, now, some high risk factors for teenage suicide, and that has gone way up, and, you know, it is substance abuse and family history of suicide, violence, sexual and physical abuse in the family towards the children and towards each other, the adults. Bullying. A lot of times kids get on their cell phones and whatever, and then as things happen and there's bullying, and they're asking for parents to limit, you know, the time the kids are on their cell phones. Well, that's kind of hard because they have nothing else. What do they have right now? You know, they can watch TV. They're even saying to sort of like watch what they're watching on TV, okay? And again, social isolation. With the drug abuse, fentanyl is out there. It's everywhere. It's very heavy in California, but it's also heavy out here too. And kids are getting a hold of fentanyl products. Some are synthetic, but they have fentanyl in them. And so a lot of kids are dying from that. So these are things that we have to worry about because of the world that we live in. So I wanted just to bring that to your attention. And also, too, the National Prevention Suicide Hotline number is 800-273-TALK, and that actually is 8255. I don't like it when they do that, TALK. Just put 8255. So it's 800-273-8255. That's a national hotline. And then you have, you know, NAMI. I've heard of NAMI before, DuPage, as they put it, NAMI-DuPage, and that's 630-752-0066. That's 630-752-0066, okay? And the name of this, if you look this up that I was telling you about, it's the name of the website is Get Support from Linden Oaks Behavioral Health. And they offer a lot of good information on that, Linden Oaks Behavioral Health. And their telephone number is 630-305-5027, 630-305-5027. Okay, so now I've given you out some good information there. I happen to come across it. I do a lot of you know, work like that, trying to find things to help people. And if you have any questions about it, you can always call me, and I can, you know, reiterate what I just said, because we're going through a time in our lives right now where our children, who are already at risk, many of them, who are suicidal, are more so. The suicide rate has gone up tremendously. In 2020, the suicide rate was huge, okay? And, of course, the pandemic's been around for about a year. So I'm going to open up a mic. I'm going to open up Pamela. She had called in first. And I'm going to go down the line and see what she has to say about what I've been speaking. Okay, your mic is open. Pamela. Hi.
Hi. Hello, Carol. Hello, everybody on the panel and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, some adolescents don't really want to die, but they're like asking and crying out for help. You know, Carol, when they're trying
yes.
to commit suicide, they're not always really wanting to. It's just that they're something's going on in their life that they need to talk to somebody about. Even child abuse. I mean, yeah, child abuse or sexual abuse or, you know, in their younger years that they need to talk about. And, you know, they don't know how to express themselves. So it's a form of trying to get somebody's attention, you know. There's been a lot
That's
of research
true.
On subject. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you
so.
Know, Pamela, that's very, very true. But what they're saying today now is, and it is true what you say, because I've worked with both, and so have you, okay? But the point is this, because of what's going on in our world, if they even display any type of those behaviors that I just mentioned, then be careful. We can't say,
right.
well, you know, we can't do that anymore. We can't. Because the suicide rate, for God's sake, has gone sky high. It's
right.
ridiculous. And, you know, and it's mostly in 2020. It's, well, that's when the pandemic, more or less, really, we came really, really aware of it. And all these restrictions got put on the kids and adults, too, on all of us. And so, therefore, it's making for a very hard life, you know, for children. And of course, we worry about our children, you know. We worry about adults, too. But the kids need a voice, and the kids need people to watch after them, you know, to look after them. So, anyway, let me get down. Let me introduce everybody. And here's Mark now. This is your hubby. Yes, it is. And he's going to be the trailer tonight, you know, my co-host, right? And, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Carol. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, too. Yeah. Heavily snowed in. We had a little over 30 inches. I think it was 32, something like that. And it's going to snow tomorrow. I'm not a happy camper. No. But,
yeah,
but anyway.
I remember those days.
Yeah, I know. Well, what's the lowest it gets in Louisiana?
Well, no, I used to live in Pittsburgh, so I've dealt with 24 inches in one night at college, and we couldn't go to school. And I've seen a lot of snow and blizzards when I lived up there, but we only had one day of snow down here, so we're good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, right now, the snow bunny, Carol, is thinking second thoughts. I'm not too happy. So, but anyway, okay. I'm happy you're here. And let me turn on Bill's mic here. He was supposed to maybe see if he could find Michelle. I'm worried about her because I spoke to her. I don't know what's going on with that.
Right, right. I know you spoke to her, and of course we're all good friends. So I
mm-hmm.
both called her and texted her, reminding her the show had started and that you were here. So.
Mm-hmm.
I did not contact her directly. I had to leave a voicemail and then a text. So she is notified, and hopefully she's fine, you know. We love Michelle
yeah.
very much.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
one of
and
our longest, she's one of our longest-serving co-hosts, too, on Thursday nights. First Thursday of each month is hers. So 32 mm-hmm. inches of snow. Jeez, we don't have any
yes.
snow here.
I'll be quiet.
It was freezing here. It was 65 degrees today.
Oh, my goodness. Whatever could you do? Did you put a sweater on?
That's what my wife says anyway. It's freezing. It was 65 degrees. She's from
oh
Brazil. For those who don't know, Christina's from Brazil. So everything below 75 is freezing to her. All right. To mention the topic, the thing that you talked about, Carol, is what we refer to as intervention. It's the mm-hmm. job of the parents and the adults in the world to keep to educate ourselves as to what to look for and then to do that job. And mm-hmm. we intervene, that's why it's called intervention, when we notice, especially if there's more, if there's one, like you said before, if there's one of those things going on, well, that could be just being a teenager kind of. But if there's more than one, start to be concerned. And you have to insert yourself in the child's life because they won't willingly come forward. So you have to encourage them to tell you what's going on. But I warn people not to do it by way of interrogation. Do it by way of storytelling. Ask them if there's something they'd like to talk about and encourage them to keep talking about, to tell the story of what's going on. I know as a child myself, I ran from being interrogated because it was one of the things my mother did all the time. She'd ask a question, then she'd ask a question, then she'd ask a question, and then she'd ask a question, and it drove me crazy. The thing that Pamela is talking about, she mentions that children don't know what to do, is called prevention. And that's when we teach children from the earliest age about the issues of child abuse and trauma and suicide and other things, that there are people in their life that they can talk to about anything, and namely their parents, hopefully. But, you know, also it could be a minister, it could be someone from school, it could be, you know, it could be a counselor. Would you like to speak to a counselor? Stuff like this. Mm-hmm. That's called prevention, giving the child information so that ahead of time they might be able to recognize that some behavior a predator is doing to them, grooming them, for example, is become uncomfortable. And they only have to feel uncomfortable to come to mommy. They don't have to be abused. But, you know, we could stop a lot of this if we educated children about what to be warned about and what to do about it if they do experience any of this. So these are two things that we stress at NASCA, of course, along with recovery. But prevention mm-hmm. is the teaching of children, and intervention yep. is the teaching ourselves, and then the action that we take as adults to, you know, intercede when we think a child might be in trouble. So I thought I'd just put that on the record and let you call on the next person. But thanks, Carol.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. You said, and that's why I always stress too, Bill, prevention. And that's why we need to speak to our children. I think I said that on Tuesday's show. We have to learn, make it a part of parenting, you know. It's very, very important. Okay, we have Peter from Canada here, and I'm going to open up his mic. Hey, Peter.
Good evening, everybody.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't get through to you before. You were on my cell phone, and my cell phone was acting up. I don't know why, because it's charged up. But I think maybe it's because it's used too much. I don't know. But I did see your message. Yeah. So, hello.
Hello,
anyway.
Everybody.
Yeah. Okay, let me go to Annie from California.
Hello, this is Annie.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, everybody. Oh, I'm just doing wonderful. Couldn't be better. Thank you.
It's so nice to hear that. Somebody's doing wonderful. I like that.
Fine.
All right, let's sit down to,
And it was very warm today in California.
There. I gave you a strawberry. Well, you know what? I don't like it when it's too hot, and I don't like it when it's too cold. I want it 75, yeah. Like Bill mentioned before. To me, that's the perfect temperature for me. That's mine. But anyway, let's go down to Katarina. I want to get her involved also. Hey, Katarina, how you doing?
Hey, it's great to be on. And you know what? It's freezing down here in Alberta as well. So
yes.
Fly me down to Florida, goddammit, you know. But I can feel the heat just by talking to you guys. So send some of those waves over here.
Okay, we'll do that. So tonight we're talking about suicide prevention and things for, you know, for people to hear. And I'm going to put you on hold for a second there, honey. Yes. Okay, I want to see something here. Okay. No, that didn't help. All right, but anyway, all right, the point is we're talking about suicide and prevention and signs to look for because, again, our country, and I'm sure it's not just our country, for God's sake, we have, it's not a pandemic. To me, it's like something bigger than that, you know, it's like a plague because it's everywhere. So people out there, I'm just asking that you, you know, watch out for your children. Watch out for your children. And if they're acting in a way that's not in the norm, then that could be a red flag. And you may have to get them help. And I always feel sorry for the children that come from dysfunctional homes like we did, you know, because who are they going to go to? You know, the kids. And a lot of times the parents, you know, don't do anything because they're the ones who are the abusers. And they are finding out in the hospitals, and it mentioned this one article that I just had read before, that the ER rooms are filled, all right, with people. And it's filled a lot with children at the pediatrics, okay? There's a hospital in Philadelphia. It's overflowing with children. And you see, our children, they're just little kids, and they can't fight back. A lot of them can't fight back. And unfortunately, they're not going in, and I don't mean this in a nasty way, they're not just going in for a broken arm. They're going in for maybe life-threatening type of injuries because the parents don't know how to cope. They may have, you know, problems themselves, you know. And so anyway, that's why it's so important, at least for those people who have children, you know, who have good homes, you know, keep your eye on them. And the things that I read, you know, before, if you see a change, get them help because the numbers are skyrocketing. They're skyrocketing. Is there someone who wants to bring up a topic, okay, that we could speak about? I had to get that off my chest. I wouldn't feel good about me if I didn't. So anyway,
well, Ms. Carol,
I found it disturbing.
Ms. Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ms. Carol, this is Mark.
Hi.
I was just thinking of talking about suicide and signs of it. Now, just keep in mind, this is a layman's opinion or observation, but, you know, with most of the, from 12 to 18, most of the kids, they got cell phones these days. And this technology has allowed for worldwide bullying. When someone gets bullied, it gets put on, posted, and then it's basically sent around the world. And I'm wondering if these young kids, they're not really mature socially, how they can't handle it. You know, they can't handle this, you know, this bullying that's been on them go all over the place. It just goes viral sometimes, as they say. And I'm wondering if that may be a cause for some of them to just lose it and can't take it, you know, because I know when I was growing up and we didn't have cell phones for one, and, you know, you weren't really, I'll speak for myself, I wasn't really mature socially unless you had a basketball, I was, but if not, I was a social misfit, and I don't know if I could handle people talking about me or bullying me. So I'm thinking today with such worldwide use of cell phones and videos and everything going viral that kids can't handle it, you know, socially, and that they just, you know, give up and then do suicide.
Well, what you're saying is very right, Mark. Absolutely. I remember a few years ago now, let's see if Bill remembers this, but we had an article where a girl was being bullied horribly in school. It was awful. And no one could leave her alone, you know. So finally, her mother allowed for her to be homeschooled because it was too much that she was, you know, trying to take on in school. Couldn't deal with it. Well, these girls that were bullying her actually went to her home then. and started bullying her outside of her house. I guess they were yelling at her, whatever. And this poor kid, I would have called the police. That's what I would have done, but the mother didn't. But anyway, this poor kid, she ended up killing herself. Because, you see, the bullying was just so, so bad that she couldn't deal with it. And the mother tried by having her homeschooled, you know, to get her out of that situation, remove her from one situation and put her in at home. So then these terrible girls, then went and bullied her outside of her house. She certainly didn't invite them in for ice cream, okay? You know, so it was done outside of the house, and she killed herself. So what you're speaking about is something that could very well be true, because that was a part of what I was reading here, was that watching the cell phones and, of course, the computers and even watching what they're watching on TV. I mean, my God. Well, we should do that anyway. That's true. But in other words, watching over your children and guiding them, you know, because, and I'm looking so hard at this internet thing. I want to have this guy come on the show and teach the parents more about internet safety. We have to do this because there's so many of the chat rooms and everything. And then with the kids, you know, they don't know where to go, where not to go. And with the bullying, absolutely. We know that there's a lot of bullying. That there's no doubt. And when you get that on the, and it does go viral a lot of times, it's horrible. You know, it can and it does. So these kids, you know, bullying is a horrible, horrific thing. I knew a lady that would go to schools and teach about bullying and inside the schools, but she wanted to be paid, you see, and she didn't last long. Now, what we do here at NASCA, we do from our hearts because we have been bullied. I was bullied, you know. There's a lot of us have been bullied in school, and we can certainly relate to a bullying issue, and it hurts. Some kids turn very tough, like I did. And I just punch people in the nose. That's what I do. I did several times. But and I don't advocate people do that. I'm just saying that's how I handled it as a kid. And then you have those that become, you know, introverts then. They get within themselves, you know, and they stay by themselves. They sit by themselves. They, you know, because they are so suicidal and just so down in the dumps. And some of those kids, you bet, maybe a lot of those kids, do commit suicide. You have those kids that are looking for attention, like your wifey had just mentioned, Pamela. And there is a lot of that. But you see, the attempt is there. And you know what the mindset is. And so that's why you have to be really careful. Yeah.
Yes.
But let's see what other people think about that. But let's go down to, let's see, Peter, your mic is open. And then we'll go to Annie. Peter, what do you think about bullying and so forth and suicide?
I like to try and be very careful now what I say. I don't want to cause friction, but, you know, with bullying, the bullying and the way today, with the way parents treat their children is horrific. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, you can go out downtown somewhere and you can see a parent just screaming at her kid, and you know, it's like, you know, the parents got to try and have some kind of control, and then you wonder why that the child is going to be resilient against the parents, because you know there's always got to be that screaming match. I mean, I've been in that same boat where. Beg your pardon? And I just kind of find that, you know, myself and my sister, many going back over 40 odd years ago, is that when my mother and father, just before they got divorced, they would split myself and my sister apart and try and get us into adult affairs to say, okay, who do you want to live with? Do you want to live with your mother? Because if you choose to live with your mother, then you don't want, you're not going to hear from me as the father, or the vice versa. Because my parents didn't bother going to court to deal with for custody battle. But, you know, I think it's cruel, the way things are, you know, the suicidal. Wow. I hear it on the news too many times about these school shootings in the States, and these kids are playing these video games, or they get ideas from movies, and I came across an app, and I just shared this with my wife Michelle the other day, and told her that I came across an app, and it's a game where you as a student learn how to go and assault other students and go and sexually assault teachers and shoot people. And I'm thinking, where is this world coming to? Why aren't parents these days keeping an eye on their kids, on the kind of games, the kind of material that these kids are getting into? Because the schools today, you know, it's very sad that, you know, it's not safe. It's not safe to walk outside your door.
That's true, Peter. It's so true. You know, I hate to say this, but, you know, back in the 50s, I hate to say that. But anyway, back in the 50s or 60s, even early 60s, when the mother would stay home, okay, or maybe she only worked a couple days a week or something, part-time, whatever. I think that those days were so different. You know, they had the positives and it had the negatives, okay? But it's nice that we're so advanced now today, and we have all of this and we have all of that. For God's sake, both parents have to work because of all the things that we have. You know what I'm saying? And the kids, they want this, they want that, and then all these electronics that come out and everything like you were speaking about, they have to have it. And even the schools, I mean, of course, they have all the computers and they have all this stuff and so forth. But when life was a little bit more simple, let's put it that way, there was trouble back then too, don't get me wrong. But on the other hand, it's a different kind of world that we're living in today, and it is a dangerous world. Absolutely. I agree with you, and it's sad. Let's go down to Annie in California here and open up her mic.
Hi.
What do you think about all this?
Well, I've been thinking about what my experience has been with either bullying or suicide, and the only bullying I experienced was my mother's bullying. She bullied me every day. At school, I didn't have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
However, in high school, my best friend would bully me. She was kind of mean, and I would let her be mean to me. And as far as suicide, when I was a little girl, I was suicidal. I remember being at the beach and walking out into the waves and I just kept going. I wanted to just die and just swim. I came back. I don't know if somebody got me or what. I was pretty little. But I remember walking out there. And I have a nephew who attempted suicide, and that's been a strained relationship in the family. It was a few years ago, but he's been unable to do anything since. And it's like you don't want to say, well, get a job, you know, because, well, what if he tries suicide again? It's very difficult, you know, because you're so tiptoeing around him.
Yeah, yeah. It is very difficult. I, too, had someone who had committed suicide in my family. And he was due to graduate, for God's sake, high school. And, boy, one day that was it. Boom, it was over with. And believe me, that family is still going through hell. I don't know how many years it's been now, but it's been quite a few. And every time his birthday comes around, every time there's holidays and things that he was so much a part of in the family, that part of the family just really, they sort of like isolate themselves. And one wants to move, the mother, I think, wants to move, and the father doesn't. And, you know, because of memories. And it's a very hard thing for people to go through, you know, when a child does commit suicide. I tried to commit suicide, and I got stopped because one of my friends came home from a date. She was living with us, and I thought she was out for the night. And she came in, she pulled me by my long blonde hair because I was a peroxide pirate blonde then. So, yeah. And, you know, but my hair was very long, and she grabbed me by my hair and pulled me out of that house. And my mother was on one side, my stepfather on the other side, and neither one of them tried to stop me. Yeah, I know. So, you know, I had then suicidal ideations. But my friends did too. We're like magnets to each other. A lot of times, we choose friends that are very much similar to ourselves. Maybe our stories aren't quite the same. Just like here on NASCA, our stories are not quite the same. But we sort of like cling together and pull together, and because we are close, You know, we understand each other's feelings. Yeah. So I know what it's like. I was there. And had she not come home, I wouldn't be here tonight. No, you wouldn't be hearing me. You wouldn't be hearing me. Because I was serious. So these things happen. Let me go down to Katrina here. Hi.
Wow.
It's your turn. You're up. Go ahead.
Yeah, great conversations. And I love that we got to this part of the topic. You know, what I feel it all comes down to, the drug addiction, suicidal ideation, the bullying, the isolation, the depression. It's that feeling of not being taken seriously, of not being seen, of not being heard, of not feeling human. It almost like we feel like, and children feel like, they don't belong in the world. And that is farthest from the truth, because when you get down to the bottom of it, every single individual that is born is unique and is beautiful in their own way, and they harbor so many gifts and so many talents that maybe at the moment of despair, we don't see it. The child doesn't see it. We have a hard time connecting to our work. But, you know, sometimes all it takes is one person to see us and to remind us that we are worthy of the journey, we're worthy of living, we are worthy of contributing something to society. And I came across the quote today, and I think it's quite, I don't know, it just really spoke to me. And it's by Pablo Picasso, and he says, "The meaning of life is find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away." So here we are, even on NASCA, all panelists. In some ways, you know what? Our gift is sharing our story. It's sharing the experiences, bringing voices in. What Bill has created has been amazing. And you know, everyone on this panel, like, we know what it feels like to be hurt, to be in fear. Some of us know what violence feels like. And maybe by tonight being on the show, we can take some pain away from a listener. You know, you're not alone. There's people like you, and it's trials and tribulations. You know, I do believe in God. I'm not religious, but through my own life journey, there were times where there was no one to turn to, and I had to turn to the higher power just to stay afloat. And sometimes that's what happens. If you can't find a person, sometimes it's books, it's YouTube videos, it's quote, poetry, it's art, or it's prayer. But there are ways to stay afloat. So, yeah, great conversation.
Yeah. Well, it is it's a good conversation. I think it's a needed one, too, because, again, the stats are so high. But you make a good point, because, you see, now is the time, you know, on TV, they say they're trying to make home is a wonderful place to be, and they have all these things, and oh, it's just wonderful. We're all home. We're all together. Really? Okay. Well, sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. Okay. And, you know, for those kids who don't have anyone to turn to, because home is such a bad place to be, and they're trying to escape all the time, they do end up, you know, running away. And I've run away. I ran away. My mother told me to run away, and I did, too. Boy, yes, I did. And I'd sneak back home. I'd have someone bring me back home, go into the basement. And the kitchen was downstairs from the basement, so I'd sneak upstairs like at 3 o'clock in the morning. Here I am, even back then. And I'd take fruit, and I'd take, you know, a bread, and I'd take maybe make quick peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, whatever, something that wouldn't really be missed that much. Anything that I could grab, because I had friends out on the street. I just simply did, and I was the youngest. So they didn't try to push drugs on me. In fact, they'd get mad at me if I even thought of, like, doing heroin, and some of them were doing heroin, okay, and all this other stuff. I was like their kid sister. That's unusual. I was lucky. But I would bring back things to them and for them. And down in the basement, I would change my clothing because the washer and dryer was there. And I wouldn't dare start that up because I'd wake someone up. But there were some folded clothing, and I just grab things is what I do, go back and forth, go back and forth. People don't understand that when kids come from, you know, from homes that are so dysfunctional, we become survivors then, okay? If we're going to live, if we want to live, we become survivors then because we have to do things that other kids and people don't do. And we learn to do it so that we can survive. You see, that's where, and we're all survivors on this show, every single one of us, you know. So, you know, survivorship is something not to be sniffed at because, you know, like teachers can go out, heavy-duty professionals, PhDs, whatever, they can go out, and if they haven't, and I don't want people to go through this, don't get me wrong, but if they haven't experienced, you know, being a child who is abused, they don't have the same sense and feelings like we do. This is why we gravitate towards each other. We can red flags go up. A lot of times you can feel that someone's in trouble, you know, that they might try to commit suicide, especially if you yourself had tried it, right? We seem to know what to look for. But there are many people out there who don't understand that. And that's why it's so important, you know, for us to talk about it once in a while, to give stats if we have the right stats. And also, too, the situations, you know, to look at it, you know, so that we see someone's not acting their normal self, then we know that there might be a problem. And Bill is right, because there's a way of, I don't like to use the word interrogating someone, but there's a way of speaking to someone. And if you do it properly, you can get a lot of information from them, okay, if you do it right. That's something that's learned. And, you know, you can find out if they've been sexually abused, if they've been beaten. Yeah, if you can probably see that. But the other abuses that we speak about, the emotional abuse, the sadness, the sad children, the ones that could well want to just simply say, hey, I'm 14 years old. I've had enough. I've seen enough. I've done enough. I've had enough happen to me, and I can't take it anymore. Because that's where their mindset is at. You know. So thank you for that. And, you know, let me go back up to Pamela up here and see if she has something that she wants to add to this. Okay. Pamela. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Now you're on.
Okay. Well, the point I wanted to make was, and thank everybody for putting in, you know, what, because when we put our heads together, it's better than one, right? More heads are better than one. But
yes.
I just want to encourage parents to not feel embarrassed or feel held back from getting their kids counseling if they need it. You know, there's some things that parents can't handle. And if the child keeps acting out somehow aggressively or, you know, or showing signs of depression or isolating or actually bullying other kids, you know, in their own home, siblings can be bullies, you know. So they should, parents should try to reach out and get counseling and, you know, try to get positive support. You don't have to talk about, you know, all the negatives all the time. You know, they need to know, you know, they need to have goals set in the home. They need to have structure, regulation, and reassurance. You know, especially children, they don't understand this COVID thing, and, you know, they may have anxiety or, you know, all these feelings come on them, and parents need to be aware of that and intervene before it gets too out of hand, you know?
Absolutely.
Before they get to the point, yeah, before they get to the point of suicidal ideation. And if these children are having so many possibilities, you know, just do what a psychiatrist does in the beginning of, you know, finding out, just ask them if they're having any thoughts, you know, of harming themselves or harming others, you know, and just point blank ask them, you know, don't wait for a therapist to do that. Maybe too late, you know.
Well, I do know that in my state, New Jersey, boy, I don't like New Jersey, but one thing that the governor has, what's his name, Murphy or something, was talking about having was classes for just like what we're speaking about tonight, you know, to kids that they know are at risk because they have a history and it's been, you know, the school knows about it, the people in administration and all that. And then, too, to leave it open for kids who maybe come from bad homes and a place for them to go, to talk about depression and how they're feeling and so forth. And if that does actually happen, the COVID hit then. So you see, this was a while ago. But if
mm-hmm.
that does happen, mm-hmm. if it does happen, that would be very good, very good. You know,
well,
because we need that.
I think it's going to have to happen because the parents are going to feel overwhelmed. They're not used to. A lot of them aren't used to having their children home at a school, and they're going to
mm-hmm.
have to find ways to, you know, readjust themselves to be in a family, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be in having interpersonal relationships that are healthy. You
well,
know?
Our kids need something, you know, and like if all the states, if they could, you know, have schools, maybe just one day a week or something where kids open up a classroom or something where kids could, you know, be allowed, of course, being masks on and all precautions taken. The room would have to be, you know, scoured before the kids came in and scoured after they leave, you know, after they leave. But a place for them to congregate, to talk, to have counselors
right.
there. I think that would be very, very helpful in every school district, you know. Couldn't be maybe in every school, but maybe schools nearby that they could get to, you know what I'm saying. And maybe that would help. But Jesus, people always, do they always have to be paid, Pamela? You know what I'm saying? This is a crisis. This is a crisis.
Right.
And I never took any money for any presentations that I gave. I was offered a few times, and I didn't take it because I'm there because I'm speaking from the heart. And if people could only have more heart and not think about dollar signs, because that's a big problem in our country and probably in other countries too, dollar signs. If you don't pay me, I'm not going to do. That's why that lady that was hired in Phillipsburg, in my area, to speak about, bullying, well, she didn't last long. And there was a man also. I was going to bring him on the show. And then when they find out, oh, they're not going to get paid, well, then you say, that's not right. I don't like that. It's not right. So, but yeah, if we could do that, every county or every few counties throughout the state, open up a classroom once a week. I mean, how's that going to hurt anything? And then maybe it would help.
They could take some of the school money, that they were going to spend on the students and, see about getting a counselor, a school counselor to take this on,
Yeah. Or even if the families, they could, if they'd all say donate $20 or something. I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know if money has to be involved, it was nice when people came out yesterday and all over the place. I did have to pay them, though, and rightfully so, because there were 32 inches of snow. It was a lot of snow, okay. But they came from all around. I was crazy, I know. They came from all around, and they were shoveling. And I heard one guy say, well, I don't want her out here because she's not young anymore. She's pretty, but she's not young. It's funny. So I said to him, I'm still young. I got my nose out of joint. Look, I will tell you when I'm old, okay? I don't feel old yet. But yeah, I figured if I said something, someone might hand me a shovel. So I better keep my mouth shut. But the point is, when people come together, and this is what community is about, okay? If people come together in a community and help each other in the times of crisis, if people are down the street and maybe they don't have money and they're hungry, but they don't quite qualify, say, for welfare, whatever, they don't have food stamps, for God's sake, help them. There's got to be some people to help them. And there's other ways of helping people, any situation. And if we could all have a mindset where we could become people like that. And I must say that I heard stories, of course I didn't see this, I wasn't born yet, but during the Depression, my mother's family came from Iowa. And they had a huge farm. So unfortunately, in those days, they called them the bums. Okay, they didn't call them homeless people. They called them the bums. That's what they were called. And there was a railroad track nearby at the end of their property. And so what they did was they had huge tables outside, and they put vegetables, tomatoes, all kinds of stuff, apples. And they would jump off of the trains to get, what was laying there, food of all different kinds. So my mother learned at a very early age that, to give. And I was brought up that way. And I still do that today. I give. And if I have something that I can give and I'm able to give, then I give. And if everybody could just do that, to give to someone, don't judge them. If they're homeless, don't judge them, okay? Because a lot of them have walked in our shoes. Got news for you, okay? But they ended up out on the street. It's as simple as that, and so did I when I was a kid. So I have a lot of empathy many times for the homeless. So if we could be a kinder society and not a greedy society and a helpful, compassionate society, then we wouldn't have as many problems as we have today. and not people trying to be more powerful than others. You know, it just doesn't work. And then, so I'm sort of like just, I'm the oldest one here on the panel, okay? So I've been around a while, and I might even still be here when I'm 90. Oh, no. I'm just teasing. But, you know, the point is, you know, I've seen a lot of things in my life. And I think how sad, because if we would just, you know, be kinder to each other, you know, if we could just find a way to do that. Let me go down here. Let's see, who didn't I hit? I don't mean hit. I just love the way I speak. Let's go to Bill. I haven't heard from him in a while. There we go. Bill, what do you have to say about all this?
Well, I have a lot to say, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time from the panel because I'm really enjoying listening. Katarina hasn't called in a while, so that's a special treat for me. But everybody here is special, you know, in their own way, as you just said. We all have our own stories, and I like the expression that Pablo Picasso offered us, that the meaning of life is and the purpose of life. That's really great. I don't have a lot to share about this. I'm very grateful that people find NASCA useful, and we are all here encouraged to take our commitment to our own recovery seriously, to the point where we want to give back. And however that can be, whether it's simple outreach or taking on a role here at NASCA that's needed, or making a contribution, $20 a month would be great. If we could get that from a lot of people, we'd be all set. Right now we have a very small treasury because the number of donations that have come in haven't matched the costs of the end of 2020. But that's okay. We're not panicked yet. So, thank you, Carol, for leading a good show. I never did hear back from Michelle. I hope she's good. I'd ask for a few prayers from our panelists on her behalf. Thank you, Carol.
Well, no, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm going to say some prayers for her because we were going back and forth just not that long ago, even on my cell phone before I started acting up. And I think that was a last night message, though. So I don't know, and this is not her typical behavior, and she was looking forward to the show. So I'm feeling a little bit bad about that. So anyway, everyone, keep her in mind, and I just hope that she's okay. Okay, let me go down to back down to Katarina, and then I'll go up to Annie. I'm going to go backwards this time, okay, and see what she has to say. Go ahead.
Hi, Carol. I love all your wisdom. I don't know, every time you speak, I'm in awe, so thank you so much. But what I also wanted to remind people is, you know, when we think of a counselor, when we think of a teacher, when we think of a police person, anyone with some sort of authority or in the helping industry, most of the time we think they are a safe person. You know, without realizing that covert narcissists, and this is a favorite topic of mine, they hide away people that are sadistic, people that may not understand, people with no empathy, people with personality disorders. They can very well be in those professions. So when you seek out help or when you feel that it's time for you to tell your story to someone, I would encourage you to also listen to your intuition. And most of the time, if something doesn't feel right about a person, even if it's a counselor or, you know, a doctor or anyone you're dealing with, if something doesn't feel right, most likely it's because you're picking up on some red flags and things are not really meshing. How I discovered covert narcissists is that I would often ask for my records. And even if I had the sweetest counselor who seemed to be really encouraging me and giving me great advice, in the notes, sometimes it would say otherwise. You know, so sometimes you have to get your records to really discover people. And I mean, I worked in the non-for-profit industries, you know, youth
services, things like that. And I've seen it firsthand, staff writing notes that were not in accordance with reality. So if you would see someone getting abused, they would write that the person was having behavioral difficulties, but they were just going through what's called reactive abuse. So they had so much abuse that I had enough, and they were trying to stand up for themselves, but it was misinterpreted. And in the notes, those notes then were a gateway to call the police on them, and then they had a record. So, you know, society can re-traumatize you. Don't have the misconception that everyone is out there with a good heart and is going to be of help. But then again, don't close yourself off, because there are a lot of good people that are truly there to help. So listen to your intuition, and it's a journey. It's a journey of discovery, and I'm still on that journey, you know. So that's my little two cents.
Wow. I think that's very well said. Okay, very well said. So often when we're survivors, and we have to learn this, you know. We speak about at times, and at times I do bring it up because I like the way it was presented a few years ago. Many times we put bricks up, a brick wall up, okay, because we're so afraid of the people out there on the other side, because we think they might harm us, okay, because we've been harmed so much, because we've gone through so much, we've seen too much, we've done too much, and so too much has been done to us, et cetera, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, as you get on your healing journey, you start to take one brick at a time away. You're making yourself more vulnerable to what's on the other side of that brick wall. And, you know, you get halfway down. And someone might, you know, smack you around a little bit, whether it's verbally or whatever, or hurt you, whatever. But that doesn't mean that everyone is going to be that way. And once you absorb that, and that you don't, like, internalize what that person did or said or whatever the case might be, you can take another brick down. Before you know it, you know, you are out there, okay? You're out there. And you have to realize that no one is perfect. People are not perfect. God made us. He made us. But we're not perfect people, okay? So we have to learn then how to not to internalize bad from other people, but instead to think of maybe they had a bad day, maybe they have their own problems. Instead of looking so much at ourselves and internalizing, we have to look and think that maybe that person has a problem. That's what I've learned to do. If someone gets nasty to me, I walk away. At one time, I would have fought them. But this time now in my life, and I can still handle myself, but I would, you know, walk away. Because that's a statement in itself, okay? So it's good to realize that there are good people out there, and there are people, yes, that you might want to walk away from. And that's just a part of life. It's unfortunate, but it's a part of life. People are not perfect. Thank you for that, Katarina. I appreciate that. Let's go up to Annie. Okay, I'm opening up your mic here.
Hello,
you have strange noises. Hey, you watch what you're doing. You have strange noises coming out. Go ahead. I don't mean you. I mean around you, whatever.
Yes, no noise here. Well, I just wanted to say how wonderful this radio show is. I just think it's amazing that everyone can be here and be talking about this subject publicly, and I hope people are listening all over the world and talking about it in their own homes too, because to me the taboo against talking about childhood abuse, particularly sexual abuse, that's the big problem. Nobody talks about it, and that's why it keeps continuing all the time. So the fact that you guys are here and talking about it publicly is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And that's all I have to say.
Well, I thank you for that. And we're getting better at it, okay? We're getting better at it. And like I always say, when I wrote my book, and we do have some authors on this show, Pamela's an author, and if Michelle is here, she too is an author. But, you know, back then, there was only two books on Amazon, mine and this other gal, okay? And today people are talking more. And I'm thankful for that because now it's flooded with books. So that's a good thing. Okay. Let me go up to Peter. Here you go, Peter. Go ahead. Peter, what do you have to say about all the things we're talking about here tonight?
Well, first of all, I do want to say to Pamela that I appreciate for her inspiration to me of being part of NASCAR organization. I mean, in my time, there's been never been anyone I was able to either talk to or turn to in regards to my past history. And, you know, I've been listening to the majority of the people there, and you know, I admit that I was very much a loner. It's because of the bullying that I got from my father. He was nothing but nasty. He was mean, cruel, very physically, emotionally, verbally, just abusive towards me. Act of terrorism, of threatening with me with loaded rifles to get a truth that he wants when I know that I am speaking the truth. And since I've been on this part of the world, it's I've pretty much have lightened up to who I am. You know, yeah, I think more about my grandparents because my grandparents raised me for 13 and a half years, and I was still then a loner with them. They knew what I was going through. They knew the issues that I had dealt with my father, and they knew how nasty that he can really be. And I never got the opportunity to let my grandparents know just how grateful I was really am for their raising me up. I mean, I saw my grandfather pass, die in front of me from a massive heart attack. And to watch someone that you're very close to, like granddad to me, he was a mate. We did photography together. We would do anything together. But it just happened all of a sudden. And when I came over here, I got involved with communities in Kitchener, Waterloo, in here in Ontario, through the AIDS Committee. As some of you know, but as most of you that don't know, I am a long-time survivor from sexual abuse, and also 31 years a long-time survivor of living with the HIV due to the molestation and abuse from a family member who just constantly ruined my childhood from the age of 6 till I was 14. And so sometimes I wish I knew how or who I could go to in regard to writing a book about my past history. I don't have anything of memory anymore. Like, I don't have pictures of my grandparents. I don't have pictures of myself when I was a child. I've got a few, but that's about it. But everything that I had learned from my grandparents, I do take to heart. I do speak a lot about my grandparents. And and they taught me a lot. And I went back to school when in Windsor, Ontario. And I graduated about 2.5-3 years ago and got my grade 12 diploma. Now, who in the right mind of an old man like myself would go back to school and get himself a grade 12 diploma that he's never gotten? It was very difficult. I found it very tough because the struggles was there, because I ended up in hospital from neck surgery. So that set me back, but I still managed to push forward and get my grade 12. But, you know, I hear that most of you have written your own books, but I'm not much of a writer, but I can create in ways of a poem. I mean, I did a poem in my English class because I did a public speaking in their hall, and in regards to bullying, teasing, the kind of attitude that we have to deal with kids today. But the thing with me, and now if it's all right, if I could read this poem to everybody, or isn't there enough time? Is there enough time for me to read this poem?
Sure, go ahead.
A poem that I created and did for myself in English, and because I look at myself as a photographer, a semi-professional photographer. I've been doing it for 37 years, and this poem is about who I am as a picture, or who I am as a stream, or who I am as a believer. And it goes like this, is that I am a picture. I am a picture of peace and gentleness, calmness, beauty, precious, and roughness. I am a picture with life. I am a picture with color. And I'm a picture going on a journey, believed. But I also see myself as that I am a stream. I am a stream flowing through the forest with peace. I'm a stream that is a picture-capturing moment, a stream that flows in ever-winding bends, and I am a stream that's flowing along a journey that will never end. I'm a stream of peace, a stream of gentleness, calmness, beauty, precious, and at times, roughness. I also see myself as I am that stream that crashes and falls. But I am also the stream that believes in the gentleness and the soft flow. I also believe to be that picture. I also believe to be that stream that flows. I also believe to be that picture, the stream that has an endless journey that will never end. I believe to be the stream that falls. I believe to be the stream flowing with peace, gentleness, calmness, and beauty. I believe to be the stream that levels out. I believe to be that stream that is smooth and alive. I believe to be the stream in a picture. I believe to be the stream with wonderful, precious memories. I am that picture to capture that moment. I am that stream that flows endlessly. I believe to be the precious stream winding off to a peaceful, loving, and flowing journey. And that's it.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And I do conflict myself back to this poem from time to time, even with Michelle, when I'm here with Michelle. With this pandemic, mm-hmm. You know, I do have those suicidal thoughts. I do have these thoughts go through my head. But, you know, I need to try and get myself reflecting back as that stream. We have these crashes. We have these falls. And you know, that lady that just said something about being on that journey, you know. And I think Bill said it too. We're all on a different level. We're all on a different playing field,
yeah.
Different journeys. And this journey that's taking me is where I'm trying to find myself, to know who I really am. And if I can sort of like give myself that kick in the butt to say, you know, it isn't your fault that you've been abused, that you've been bullied, you know, avoid the suicidal thoughts. You've got people around you that love you. And I know God has told me that I'm not you're not ready to go yet. I still got time for you, he keeps telling me. And even when I had the surgery in my neck, when the lights went out, I thought that was it. I was going up to the stairway to heaven, and then that was it. I was awake. It's like he's telling me, it's not time for you to go yet. So I hope that this journey of mine and being with NASCAR, having the friends and the support, I'm very delighted to have such people, including my wife, Michelle. She's there mm-hmm. for me. And mm-hmm. She knows the kind of journey that I'm on. She knows it's been rough for me. I've been through it. You know, I'm not saying I'm the perfect person. I'm not. There's only one perfect person, and that's Jesus. And right now, he's sitting alongside me, giving me the love that he needs to give me. And I'm now feeling the chill going through my skin. So I'm going to hand it back to you, Carol, because I can feel the emotion. I can feel the loving emotion of talking about Jesus is with me. So.
Oh, that's good. You know, one thing that was beautiful, what you just read and what you wrote, okay? And I see peace in there, so much peace, 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 peace. I don't know how many times you said that. And you see, we are people who want to feel peaceful, you know, because we've, in our lifetime so often, all we saw was violence and all the other. So for you to come to, or anyone to come to, the point where they can feel that peace that you so nicely, beautifully described, then you're one with yourself, okay? You're one with yourself, and you are at peace, and you'll find happiness that way. And the very thought of suicide will totally, totally leave you. And, you know, this show is just about over. We had a very calm, very loving, very giving, very quiet show tonight, a very thoughtful show. And we all shared, and it was good, and tried to find some solutions with children and to teach parents to you know, treat their children better and also to watch out for the red flags. So we covered a lot of area in this show tonight. And the only thing I can leave you with is that this too shall pass. I don't know when. None of us have the answers, not even the experts. But I do know that someday we'll be able to walk outside, look in the sunshine, and feel free, and we'll feel so much better. And anyone out there, you know, if you need someone to talk to, NASCAR is here. We do serve people. We serve people left and right, up and down, inside and out. And it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, that's the contact page. So anyway, I want to thank everyone for being here tonight. And tomorrow, okay, I'll be actually on again tomorrow. We'll have a guest, and she will be here. I don't know what happened to Michelle tonight, but I ask that people keep her in their prayers because this is not in character with her at all. So I don't know what happened in less than 24 hours. So I've just gotten a cue in my ear here that I have to end the show. So thank you, everyone, for calling in. We had a great show. It was a good show. And thank you so much for being here. Good night, and God bless. Take care of each other. Okay, let's learn to be kinder people. Amen. Good night. Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done. Blog Talk Radio.